Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, it's Mr. FSP, doing the do because I do it for you all day, every day. Bada bing, bada bang, bada boom. I'm the realest G in the room. How you doing? And despite Blog Talk Radio's issues, and despite everything that's going on, I am live and direct, and I'm going to bring it to you as best as I can. Now, you know who I am. You normally know who my co-host is, normally, but, you know, he went MIA for the week. I don't know. I think he's taking a mini vacay. But he's here today. He's here today. And I don't want to push his buttons, but I might push his buttons just because, you know, he is who he is. But JT ATM Money, please say hello to the people.
How are you today, man?
I'm doing well. And yourself? You sound so distinguished right now. I'm glad you seem so distinguished.
Well, I'm a distinguished type of guy, you know what I'm saying? And I gotta I gotta put some class into this show.
Really? That's what it is? You gotta do it? Okay.
All right. It's a dirty job, but somebody's gotta do it.
I tell you what, old timer, you ain't ready to put class in nothing other than your ass. Stop right there.
Hey, you know, you got a problem talking about that other that body part, man. It seems like you bring
whatever.
That up all the time, man. I'm starting to wonder.
Whatever. Dude.
I'm starting to wonder.
Around.
You know your commander in chief doesn't like that sort of thing. I'm starting to wonder.
Listen. I'm not gonna get into that.
I know you're not. I know you're not. I know you're not.
I don't partake in that behavior, but I'm not gonna condemn people just because they might.
Yeah, I understand.
You know,
I hear you. I understand. You don't have to go any further. You don't have to explain yourself. I understand.
Of course. Now, I got to ask you a question. How the hell is your Facebook page linked to the damn show page and not my Facebook linked to the show page? I don't know that before we go any further.
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm not that savvy to override you, man. So I have no idea. All I do is what I do when I get on my show. I post it to Facebook that we're live and in color, and I also do the same thing to Twitter, and I forget what the other one was that it's linked to that we jump on there. But that's all I do. It's got three buttons on there on the studio, and I link them and tell them I'm live and in color. Anytime I go on here. So I've been super busy, man. I've been super busy. And
what's up? What's going on? You getting more work?
Yeah, a lot more. So
That's good.
I've been super busy. In fact, I had to spend some time this morning before I came on the show here because I had to take care of something. So I've been it's been crazy. I work.
Is it a good busy or is it a bad busy?
No, it's a good busy, man. It's a good busy. It's a
okay.
good busy. Definitely a good busy. So, but you know, it's just got to take care of business. Got to make that moolah when it's available. So,
Oh, I know. You know? I know, brother. Yeah. I'm up here trying to tell my wife, you know, stop spending money. I got a mortgage to pay. I don't care what you want. It's what we need. You know?
Yep.
But.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get off of that topic.
It's tough. It's tough. They don't want to listen, but you got to keep on emphasizing until sooner or later it'll click. It'll click.
Oh, when the water ain't on, then it'll click. No, I'm joking.
I know you, but that's the bottom line. You're right.
I'll let the water and electricity go before I miss the mortgage. I need somewhere to stay. I can take a shower at the gym. But anyway, let's keep it moving.
Let's keep it moving.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
Episode, yeah, it's going to be kind of fun for me. Maybe not so much for JT. But we're going to talk about the NFC North, the Packers,
sure,
Lions,
no
Bears, and Vikes. Oh, my. But that's not the part that you're probably not going to like, JT.
What's that, man?
Like MMA.
What's that?
MMA. We're talking MMA. You're going to talk about Jones versus Daniel Cormier. Yeah. And matter of fact, we're going to start the show off
Wait a minute. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Did he get caught again?
No, he did not.
Okay,
no,
he gets caught quite often.
You know
I'm
what?
Just asking, did he get caught again?
What you're saying is so typical of a, you know, of a bigot of MMA. Look, John Jones.
No, come on, stop. I'm only talking reality here because he is the poster child of failed tests. Am I right?
Am I right?
Yes, he is.
No.
He's the poster child. Come on, man. Come on. I wouldn't be surprised after this he gets popped again. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's his MO.
Well, that's what you said last time, and he got popped multiple times. Come on, man. Come on.
Well, the bottom line is this. Daniel Cormier is looking to get revenge for his only MMA defeat ever, where he lost to John Jones. John Jones is looking for redemption because he was interim champion while Daniel Cormier was out injured. And he didn't look good at all after coming back from a suspension for substance abuse and
Say that again.
And then when they were going to fight again, and it's been proven because he had a year ban and it was reduced. No, I believe he served a year. I believe he served his year. Because before their previous fight, he was I'm not going to use the word caught, but he was suspended. He was suspended for using a banned substance, not a controlled substance, but a banned substance that was actually prescribed for him, which actually was prescribed. So now the news is the big fight. It has a big fight card too. So it's a big fight card that I want to go over real quick. But hey, it beats Mayweather. I don't care if you got to go to the bathroom. You need to take that to the bathroom. Why would you constipation on air?
I'm going to the bathroom because I'm about to get rid of this MMA fight. That's what I'm going to the bathroom for.
Whatever.
Yeah.
No,
that's
not.
What I'm going to the bathroom for. And that's what you should do with this MMA stuff. Go to the bathroom and get rid of it.
No. It's the future, and boxing is garbage. But
that's all it is—a digression. Go ahead.
Here's the deal.
Yeah.
So the fight's happening today, and John Jones returns to the ring to try to give Daniel Cormier his second defeat. And the last time they actually fought, Jones was the champion. So he could afford to not be the very best that he needed to be. And he was good, but he was in there with a world-class and world champion wrestler, Olympic wrestling champion, I should say. The difference
is sickening.
That Cormier, will you stop? Cormier is the champion now, and John has to go in. And if he doesn't knock him out, which I don't think he'll do, because I don't think Daniel Cormier is going to stand up there and fight him. I think he's going to try to wrestle him and smother him. But Cormier, he doesn't have to beat John Jones to keep his title. He just has to make sure John Jones doesn't beat him. And that's the difference. John Jones is an immense talent.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Because you lost me there. Say that again.
Okay. Just like in boxing, I'll break it down to a simple term for you.
Wait a minute. Don't even go there.
I'm just trying to break it down for you so you understand.
Like I'm some illiterate
like in boxing,
dummy.
In MMA, that might be true, but not in other things.
Daniel
Cormier.
You know what?
What? No, you don't got the Ford. Are you the reason why I couldn't use direct dialing? Because direct dialing was not working. No, it's not.
I just jumped on the board because I was waiting because I wanted to give you that boo. Oh,
that's fine. That's fine. Because you're a sucker. But anyway, just like in boxing, will you stop being rude? The champion does not have to beat the challenger. He just has to make sure the challenger doesn't beat him. And that's subscribing to the Floyd Mayweather style of boxing. So, Daniel Cormier,
You just talking about Floyd?
I said Daniel Cormier.
Hallelujah.
You know what, Jerry? I'm going to mute you, and I'm going to boot your access if you don't stop. All right.
Go ahead.
DC,
I'm sorry.
DC is that former fighter, whereas he will, since he's such a great wrestler, if he gets you to the ground, he will make it the most boringest fight ever. And
that's what's going to be anyway. That's what's going to be anyway.
Position. That's not. Well, listen. These guys genuinely don't like each other. Will there be one or two rounds where they, take off or whatever? Probably so. But I believe if they start slugging each other, you can forget the kicks. You might see a couple knees. But you're going to see hammer fists, punches, elbows, and stuff. But the way that Daniel Cormier fights, that's not the MO for his winning. The MO for his winning is get Jones to the ground and smother him and lay on him. Jones is a pretty good wrestler. Don't get it twisted. But he's not on the same level of wrestling as DC. Now, with that being said, Daniel has publicly said he'll stand up there and he'll fight, Jones in the middle of the octagon. And then if he needs to take him down, he'll take him down and stay on him. But he's not going to go in there and just fight him just because, he's the champion. And I get it. So it wouldn't surprise me if DC wins the fight if it becomes one of those boring, I'll lay on him and he can't advance or he can't make any moves. But all around MMA, technically speaking, I believe Jones is the better fighter, technique-wise. Now, Daniel Cormier, he's a very, very talented fighter. He's 19-1. Jones is 22-1. DC's won 42% of his fights by knockout or TKO. John Jones, 41%. John Jones has submitted 27% of his wins, and DC 21. 37% decision for DC, 36% decision for John Jones. I mean, they're even up until that point, JT. Now, here's the big teller that should dictate how this fight is won, but it probably won't. Daniel Cormier is 71 inches tall, so he's 6'1". John Jones is 76 inches tall, so he's 6'6". They both weigh in at 205, and DC has always had a problem coming down in weight, but he finds a way to get that determination when he fights when he's going to fight John Jones. He finds a way to come down because he's a natural heavyweight. So is Jones, but Jones is more likely to slim down to 205. It's a 12-inch reach advantage, a whole ruler reach advantage. 84 inches for Jones, 72 to DC. Legs, not that different. 45 inches for Jones, 41 for DC. Now, Jones is deadly with his legs, but if he gets his foot off the ground at some point and leaves the plant foot where DC can get it, that's a way for DC to shoot in and take him down. So I don't think that he's going to be using his legs a lot unless he's doing flying knees or something like that. But the reach is the thing. John can actually control DC with his jab. He literally can. The difference is you're going against a world-class wrestler, a Olympic-winning wrestler. You know, it's going to be tough. Now, I know you don't like John Jones, but I'll let you give your say on this because there are some other great fights on this card I want to talk about before we get into football.
There's really nothing I want to say about this, man. I mean, this guy's been a multiple offender. So right there, that turns me off, that this guy is just a walking drugstore. So I'm not even interested that much more because this guy's a walking drugstore. It's not like he accidentally gets popped. He's got popped multiple times. He's got the triple play, if I'm not mistaken, in getting popped. So
no, he does not.
Three times?
Yeah.
Have he gotten popped
twice.
Three times?
For performance enhancing or substance?
No, whatever.
Wait, there's
three
a difference.
Times.
There's a difference.
Wait a minute.
There's a difference.
But, wait a minute. Performance enhancing or drugs, it's all lumped together for me because there's a pattern there. There is a pattern there.
I can agree.
So if he's gotten more than twice, I'm saying it's a triple play. Maybe he's gotten a home run, which is four bases. I'm not sure.
No.
But
he's such a hater.
But I am not interested in a guy that gets popped multiple times, and especially in a sport like MMA. And because the fact is let me finish about MMA because it relies on a lot of physicality, and that it happens to enhance your physicality, and if it's on or in the ring or out. This guy's got a pattern, and I'm not interested in if he's got a pattern like that. Obviously, if he's gotten popped twice for performance-enhancing drugs, he hasn't learned his lesson. It's going to happen again, in my opinion. And it may happen more than once again, in my opinion, because the fact is this guy's got a pattern. And until I see he changes
like
his pattern...
Abuse.
What?
Mm-hmm. Just like spousal abuse. You're absolutely right. But you support a spousal abuser.
Stop it. That's a totally different subject. Yes, it is. It's totally different, Victor.
No.
It's totally. Wait a minute.
That a person that beats up women and is disrespectful toward women.
Here we go.
Is
here we go.
with someone
here we go.
That has been
now you're trying to justify. Now you're trying to justify MMA and John Jones. Now you're trying to justify Wait a minute. Can I finish? You gave me the floor. Can I finish?
And I'm taking it back. I'm taking it back. Because you're trying to say that John Jones is bad. Come on now. Go ahead.
Are you going to let me finish?
At some point. Thank you.
Now, like I said, he's gotten a triple play, whether it's for performance enhancing drugs or street drugs. To me, they're all lumped together because, like I said, it gives you an idea of where he's at, and he has a pattern. That's a pattern, okay? That he figures he can do anything he wants, whether it's performance enhancing drugs or drugs. It's not too much different. It's all lumped together. And I got no interest in MMA anyway. And on top of that, this guy is a walking drugstore. Walking drugstore. And he still is able to get in and do the things he does. Walking drugstore. You want to bring in somebody that has the domestic violence? Totally different. Totally different scope of an offense. Totally different. Now, I didn't say I agree.
Okay.
I didn't say I agree. I just said this guy's a heck of a fighter, and I'm talking about Floyd Mayweather, since you wanted to go that route.
No, listen. Okay.
It's a totally different subject.
We're talking about character. We're talking about character. That's the same subject. Because if your character is flawed, whether street performance drugs, or it's beating up women and being manipulative of women,
you wanted to go that route.
Now, you don't have anything constructive to say about MMA or just this fight. That's the question.
No, I told you. I told you from the beginning. I told you years ago. I am not your UFC MMA guy at all. Not interested in any of these guys. And when a guy has a pattern of drug abuse, whether it's performance enhancing drugs or street drugs, I'm really not interested because this guy had gotten multiple chances.
Okay.
And still,
I'm going to move on. I don't want to hear that part because I want to talk about the card because the card has some great fights on it.
You have to talk about it.
You're such a hater for one.
I don't follow it. I don't follow the sport. It's not the type of sport that I like.
I got I got it. It's not a sport you like, but I guess you don't like combat sports. And that would mean you don't like boxing. You don't like kickboxing. You don't like karate. You don't like anything like that. I got it.
Boxing is a highly skilled sport.
Fighting. Yeah. Okay. Tyrone Woodley's fighting Damian Maia. Now, this is Tyrone Woodley's defense.
I think it's his third
defense of his title. He defeated Robbie Lawler, and he defeated a few other guys in defense of his title. This young man is a very talented guy. He's fighting a guy, Damian Maia, who is a boring fighter. But Damian Maia, if he gets you on the ground, because he's a Brazilian black belt and master at this stuff, he's going to choke you out. But if he stands up and he tries to fight you, you can put him to sleep. You can injure him. He's more comfortable in the grappling sense of a fight. But he's been on a hell of a win streak, and he's been calling out for a title shot. He finally has it, and, you know, his thing, he would rather submit you than fight you, which is fine because that's his style of MMA. 48% of his wins have come by submission. He's not looking to knock you out, but he has 12% of his 25 wins by KO or TKO, which is also a stoppage. He's 25-6, is 16-3-1. 41% of his wins have come by KO. This guy has speed and power and legs. The difference is you get him on the ground and he sucks. He is not good. He might have improved, but we'll see what happens in this fight. He has a slight reach advantage of 2 inches, but the thing is he just can't let Maya take him to the ground. Now, a fight that I thought Jerry might like because it's women. He loves the women's sports, but Cyborg, Chris Cyborg, this woman is a monster, literally, and hopes of her destroying Ronda Rousey or anybody else, well, Ronda Rousey, that is gone, but she's going to terrorize the rest of the 145-pound weight class in the women's division. She's fighting for the featherweight title against Tanya Edinger. Now, Tanya, she isn't in the best of shape, but she's also very technically sound. Cyborg's wins, she has 16 wins, 88% of them by knockout or KO, only 13% by decision. Now, Tanya, she has 42% by KO, TKO, 21% by decision, and 37% by submission. Now, she's 19-5. The difference is she does not throw a lot of punches. She might throw one punch in a minute. She's more of a counter striker. Cyborg, on the other hand, she throws almost 9 punches a minute. And that's ridiculous, especially for this weight class. This is going to be a whitewash, in my opinion. I believe Cyborg goes in there, unless she gets caught, and wins this title. If you have not heard of Chris Cyborg, look her up. I really didn't like her. I don't like her, but I can't deny her physical ability. She's a terror. She literally, in my opinion, could beat a lot of the dudes in the 145-pound weight class because she's that good. Still don't like her, though. On to Robbie Lawler facing Donald Cerrone. Now, this is a fight I really like. I really like this fight because these two guys, they will scrap. They will go at it. Now, Cowboy, he's been on a he's lost a few fights, and he changed weight classes. But all around, he's an excellent fighter, Robbie Lawler, former champion, the guy Tyrone Woodley beat for the title. Again, very talented fighter. The guy will slug. He has a no-quit in him. I don't believe he's ever been knocked out. He might have been, but all the fights I've seen, he's always been there and hasn't gone down. 74% of his 27 wins have come by KO or TKO. That says something. Donald Cerrone, 50% of his wins have come by submission. I mean, and that's one issue that Robbie Lawler faces, the ground. On the feet, he's a beast. But, you know, it's not always peaches and cream when you have a stand-up fighter versus a ground attack guy. And I think that's the theme of this card. But that's an interesting fight. I can't even call it because I like it so much. But I'm going to say Cerrone just because I believe he's going to knock the ring rust or octagon rust off of Lawler. Lawler hasn't been in the octagon in quite some time. Back to the heavyweights or the light heavyweights. Jimmy Manawa is in the weight class of Daniel Cormier and John Jones. he actually has been lobbying for a fight for the title. And after he faces the number 5 ranked Volkan Ozdemir, if he wins, he should get a title shot. Either one of these guys, after this fight, they win decisively, should get a title shot because it's number 3 and number 5 guy. But should I have 2 fighters ahead of him taking it up? Now, Manawai is 17-2. Ozdemir is 14-1. Both of these guys rely on their hands to win the fight, 88% to 71%. Jimmy wins by 88% KO, TKO, and Volkan wins 71% KO, TKO. The reach is a bit of a not that big of a difference, not like Cormier and Jones, but Jimmy has a 4-inch reach advantage at 79 inches versus the 75 inches of Volkan. Again, this card is a very packed and highlighted card. I didn't want to spend too much time on it because I believe the main card speaks for itself, but the undercards that you can be seen on Fox XX, and which are the prelims, and then Fight Pass, there are still some very, very good fights on both those sides. Check them out if you can. Awesome time for fight fans if you want to see real fighting as far as a variety of fighting, mixed martial arts style. Hopefully, the card lives up to the hype. You know, some fights never live up to the hype because of whatever reason, whether it's the fighters don't make a good fight or one fighter just wants to, you know, tap dance around and score points, which is fine. I mean, that's the way they win. That's how they defend their title. That's how they win fights. But it doesn't draw fans other than those that don't like you. And, you know, that's the case in a couple of these fights we got here. But we'll see what happens. A fight's a fight. But right now, let's get ready for a fight between JT and myself as we get ready to talk football. And when I talk football, I got to put some bulls on parade.
Carrying the ball 20 times a game requires power and valor, not niftiness. The water bug and whippet backs rarely survive the wail and howl of the banshee. Stack defenses in the pros. They must meld the buck of a billy goat with the sudden surge of a sprinter. He does not move with polish or slickness. His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
And with that being said, it's time to play a little lemonade. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Mr. FSP proudly presents our NFC North breakdown. You ready for this, JT?
I'm listening.
I just said, are you ready? I didn't say, well, you're listening.
Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready.
I can't hear the music. Can you hear the music? I don't hear it at all. Okay, well, all right. Maybe it'll come up at the inopportune time like most of these things did. All right, so we're going to talk about the Chicago Bears first, the least in the big black and blue division, and I believe they're going to stay the least in that division. But according to an NFL Team Insider Field's Key Fantasy Questions, from Athlon Sports, will Jordan Howard be used as a workhorse running back, 300-plus carries, or will he be sharing the load with Jeremy Langford? Now, last year, he was the second leading rusher in the NFL, and that was after he took over, I think, week 4 or something like that. So that's amazing that Jordan Howard did that. Jerry touted his abilities. Not too strongly because Langford is still a very capable back, but when he got injured, he opened the door for Howard, and Howard never looked back, okay? One of the Bears' biggest mistakes last year was not running the ball enough, but it's doubtful Howard will get 300 carries in 2017. Howard had 252 carries last year as a rookie. That's 1,313 yards. Even though he didn't become the starter until week 4, but in addition to Langford and Kadeem Carey, the Bears added fourth-round running back Tariq Cohen, who figures prominently as a third-down option. Does Mike Glennon start every game this season, or will he see, or will we see Mitch Trubisky before all is said and done? Now, I think you're actually going to see Mark Sanchez before you see Trubisky. Do you think so? Glennon will make $16 million guaranteed this season, so the Bears hope to get their money's worth and to bring Trubisky along slowly. Sorry about that. Fans may clamor for Trubisky late in the season, but the wiser move would be to resist the urge to toss him into the fire. Short off the pecking order for the targets among wide receivers and tight ends. Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Williams has been in the league 2 years, hasn't played one official NFL down. Injury prone, but he's their number one guy. I actually think he isn't, but by salary and by their roster, he is. The wild card is Kevin White, who has played in just 4 games through his first 2 injury ravaged seasons. He has the physical skills to become a go-to guy, but has not played enough to develop much as a route runner. Cam Meredith had a breakout season, second season, but a healthy White will take away some of those Meredith's targets. No other wide receiver is worth mentioning. Often injured tight end Zach Miller is a productive and gifted receiver when healthy, but he started just 27 games in a career that began in 2009. Deion Sims is a third down player, but has never caught more than 26 passes in any of 4 previous seasons. Rookie Adam Sheehan will get opportunities if he can make the jump from Division to Ashland. Now, I want everybody to remember there's also a guy by the name of Victor Cruz there. Victor Cruz is a savvy guy, but Jerry touted this while he was with the Giants. He is not a number one. So in order for Victor Cruz to be valuable to you in the fantasy world and to the Bears, Kevin White or Meredith needs to step up and be that number one guy. Now, Meredith, he showed out last year. He actually did. When he had the one-on-ones because people were double-teaming Alshon Jeffrey, you know, he took advantage of those opportunities. The difference is this. There's no Alshon Jeffries anymore. Kevin White, can he stay on the field? If not, Victor Cruz probably becomes that number one guy, and that means Meredith becomes the number two. They can go one-on-one with any cornerback, and they can load the box. The defense can load the box. I don't think that the Bears are going to be anywhere decent, even though their fantasy stud of Howard is a great guy to have. And Kendall Wright's on the team too, but I don't know where he's going to fall in. Marcus Wheaton comes in from the Steelers, but I don't trust Glennon. I really don't. Not a guy that I think is going to be lightened up in a run-heavy offense. The article started out saying that they didn't run enough last year. I think that's going to change. Your thoughts on the Bears before we get to the schedule, JT?
We're talking about the basement dwellers that are going to be the Chicago Bears this year. I'm not looking to see too much from them. I do believe that it's a wait and see with Mike Glennon being the starter and for how long. I do believe they want Mitch Trubisky, even though he was the second pick in the draft.
Number one overall.
No, I'm sorry. That's right. The number one pick in the draft that they want him to sit behind Mike Glennon and see what they have in Mike Glennon before they unleash Mitchell Trubisky. Things can change later in the season. It may be a shot that he gets in a game or two just to get his feet wet and prime for next year. But with the 19th ranked schedule, a strength of schedule, just a little past halfway of the schedule rankings, Chicago Bears, especially dealing with Minnesota, who's got a hell of a defense, Detroit, who's not a strong defense, but I got a decent defense with a pretty good offensive weapons. And quite naturally, Aaron Rodgers and company, who own the Chicago Bears, these Bears are going to have an issue of being competitive in their own division, much less the NFC.
I'm going to tell you, I think they go 3-13. Yes, I said 3-13. Here's the schedule. Atlanta, at Tampa, Pittsburgh, at Green Bay, Thursday night. Then on a Monday night, they come back and play Minnesota, at Baltimore, Carolina, at New Orleans, and then week 9 they have a bye. And at this point, I believe they've won maybe one game. And that's at Baltimore. Which will have the fans in Chicago and media saying, is it time to move to Trubisky? I really think that's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to get, you know, thrown into the fire, because when they come out from the bye week, it doesn't get much better. Green Bay, Detroit, at Philly, San Fran, at Cincinnati, at Detroit, Cleveland, at Minnesota. Now, I believe they win versus San Fran, and they win versus Cleveland. But other than that, I don't see them doing much more, because they're going to have to throw the ball against all of these teams. Atlanta, high-scoring offense. Tampa, looking to be a high-scoring offense. Pittsburgh, high-scoring offense. Green Bay, high-scoring offense. Minnesota, that might be more of a North black and blue division type game. Depends on who's the quarterback. Is it going to be Bradford, or is it going to be Bridgewater? At Baltimore, we don't know what they're going to be. We really don't, because Flacco's out for 3 to 6 weeks, and, you know, we don't know what the quarterback's going to be. If Flacco has a really bad disc in his lower back, he might not even make it through to week 8 or week 6. Carolina, much improved. New Orleans, now that might be a good game depending on how the New Orleans defense is, but offensively, they can't stay with New Orleans. Green Bay, of course, Detroit, of course. I actually think Philly is going to be the dark horse that everybody's sleeping on. We're going to talk about that next week. But Philly is going to whoop up on that butt. San Fran, I don't believe in Bobby Hoyer. And if they don't have Kirk Cousins by that time, I don't think they'll be doing well. At Cincinnati, at Detroit on a Saturday, then Cleveland, and at Minnesota. I don't see much of hope for the Chicago Bears. Jordan Howard, Langford, they might get a lot of touches because they're going to be slinging the ball in the backfield. Now, Meredith, he might be worth a, in my opinion, a flex or, you know, a low number two, high number three receiver. It depends on the format you're in. If you have three wide receivers, then yes, he's definitely a third receiver in there. But if you're using two wides and a flex of a running back or wide receiver, and, you know, you need somebody that's going to get some numbers, but maybe not spectacular numbers, yeah, I say put him in there. Honestly, I think the Bears are going to be at the top of the lottery again. Unfortunately for them, it's going to happen this year again until they fix their defense. Now, the defense is going to get fixed. I give it another year, which would be this year. The problem is, will their offense be able to stay up or catch up to that defense? I don't know. I really don't know. Your thoughts on that before we move on to the next team, JT?
Well, I have to agree with your assessment of what they're going to be at the end of the year. I think they're going to be drafting high again within the top five. I'd be extremely surprised if they're anything below five in the draft next year. So that means that they won't have a good year with the schedule that you laid out. I think it's safe to say that three games, maybe four games, is about what they're going to look like at the end of the year.
Okay. Let's move on to the team that's tied for the 21st toughest schedule in the NFL this upcoming season. I'm talking about the Detroit Lions. Now, I'm going to tell you the one person that this team is going to sink or swim on, the bottom last week, Amir Abdullah. I know Theo Riddick is probably going to have a little more fantasy points than him, but Amir Abdullah has the ability to be that guy, and he has the ability to be the Gordon of this year like Gordon was last year. What I mean by that is people sleeping, and then he comes out and he breaks off in their bootay hole. If he does that, that means Detroit now becomes a dual threat offense as opposed to just a passing attack offense. But according to the Athlon insider, who asked some key fantasy questions of the team, here's what they had to say. What are the plans for the backfield with Amir Abdullah coming back from a foot injury and Theo Riddick? Dwayne Washington and Zach Zinner also in the mix. The Lions are still bullish on Abdullah as a lead back, and last year's season-ending foot injury was deemed a fluke. He still has to improve his ball security, but if he stays healthy, he'll get 15 carries a game. Where he might lose out, though, is at the goal line, either to Zinner, who impressed in spot starting duty last season, or Washington, a possibly veteran free agent addition. Riddick's wrist injuries are a bigger question mark. But when he's active, he's a valuable flex option. And here's the thing, though, guys. We know that Stafford likes to throw the ball to Riddick out of the backfield. Sometimes Riddick lines up in the slot or, you know, flanking the offensive line as a wide receiver. He has good hands. You add Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, and hopefully Ebron emerges as that tight end that everyone wants him to be or thinks he should be. Matthew Stafford has a lot of weapons. If the defense can stay off of the field, Detroit can make some serious noise. Now, they have the top of the 21st type of schedule, which means it's somewhat easy, but I'm looking at it, and it's like Jerry says, not who you play, but when you play. It's going to be kind of tough for them, in my opinion. But I think this team is pretty daggone good. We talk about the defensive rankings, scoring 13th, rushing 18th, passing 19th. Third down efficiency is where they got killed, though. They were almost last. They were 31st. Red zone TDs, 27th, 5 for 27. So they gave up a lot of red zone touchdowns. Red zone percentage, 30th, 7% of the time that your team was in the red zone, they had a touchdown. That's 2 out of 3 times, JT. 2 out of 3 times. But let's go to the Marvin Jones or Eric Ebron. Who would you get? I'm going to ask you that before I read this. Who would you get, JT? Marvin Jones or Eric Ebron first?
Marvin Jones and who?
Eric Ebron.
Ooh. Good question. To tell you the truth,
okay.
I think Eric Ebron is who I would take. I think he's finally getting it, and I think he's going to have a pretty good year, a big target, middle of the field, and I think Matthew Stafford's going to use him a lot this year.
Okay, well, according to the article, Jones is probably good for another 100-plus targets and his first 1,000-yard season, but there's more growth potential for Ebron. The fourth-year tight end will never live up to the top 10 draft status, but his production has steadily climbed each season despite a series of nagging injury problems and struggles with drop passes. And depending on how quickly rookie Kenny Galladay, I can't get his name right, comes along, Ebron could have a bigger role as a de facto number 3 receiver. Will Matthew Stafford put together another top 10 fantasy season? I believe so. He's going to get paid like one. The game plan still will favor a more risk-averse approach from Stafford, unlike his record-setting years with Calvin Johnson early in his career. Proved run game could help open things up downfield without stealing too many red zone TD opportunities. And with a second full year under coordinator Jim Bob Cooter, you'd expect even better command and numbers from Stafford. Here's a guy that I think people, he's a gunslinger, you know, they're like, well, I'll get him, but he throws too many interceptions. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think last year when he only threw 10 interceptions was his career best. So I think he's going to stay there and lower. His touchdown total might improve. Last year he threw for 24. I think it goes for somewhere in between 30-35 this year. But the key here is they didn't have one back that ran the ball more than 92 times last year. Theo Riddick ran it 92 times. And he's not even the lead back. But he's the one that touches the ball the most, apparently, because 92 rushes and 53 receptions. That's a heck of a, you know, of a call for him. Now, remember, Anquan Boldin is gone. So somebody else has to step up as the number three receiver and get some of those touches. Will it be Amir Abdullah? Will it be, you know, Theo Riddick? Would it be the rookie, Golladay, you know, 6'4", 218-pound guy out of Northern Illinois? Quite possibly. But JT, this schedule kind of worries me. They open up with Arizona, then they have the Giants Monday night, Atlanta at Minnesota, Carolina at New Orleans. Then they have a bye week, week 7. Pittsburgh at Green Bay Monday night, Cleveland at Chicago, Minnesota Thursday night at Baltimore, at Tampa Bay, Chicago Saturday at Cincinnati, and finishing up with Green Bay. What do you see their record being?
I think it's probably going to match what they did last year. Maybe one more win, the most. They got the 21st, the tie with Cleveland with the 21st ranked schedule in the league. And I think that's going to benefit them. But you're right. Their running game, that's the key to where they go. They have to be more multidimensional versus, you know, they're going to always pass because they had an extremely hard time running the football. Theo Riddick is not a first or second down back. He's a third down back. Passing the football to him. They have to get somebody who can be consistent. And they were depending on Amir Abdullah before he had a foot injury. Hopefully he can stay healthy. They got Zenner, I think his name is, to be a big back. But I think the main crux of what they would do is fall on the shoulders of Amir Abdullah. So...
Okay. Well, I can see them being 8-8, 9-7, because they've got a lot of tough games. But I think both of their games, of course, on the bottom half, when you play Cleveland, Chicago twice, and Baltimore, but the first couple games are very, very tough, in my opinion. They might steal one or two of those games because Carolina and New Orleans is always a tough game. Carolina coming up to them in October might be a game they steal at Minnesota, depending on who's the quarterback. And, you know, if the running game's any good, it's a crapshoot. But it's going to be tough. So here's my question. Do you think Detroit makes the playoffs?
Ooh. Oh, wow. The NFC is going to be highly competitive, man. They're going to be right on the edge. I think it's going to be typical Detroit having to win the last one or two games to qualify for them to get into playoffs. I think that's exactly what's going to happen to them. I think they're going to lose some games early in the season that they should have won, and it may cost them near the end of the season.
Okay. All right. Not a problem. Let's move on to Green Bay. Now, here's the thing about Green Bay. They're getting better, but they're taking wide receiver who they converted last year to a running back and making him the full-time starter. He added a couple more pounds, so he's going to be a little bit bruiser. Ty Montgomery is a pretty good back, I'll be honest with you. He's the type of back that excels in their system, whereas they can run, they can pass with them, he can catch the ball in the backfield. He's a good zone running type of back, but it's, I don't know if it's his natural position, because I don't know what he played in college. I mean, excuse me, what he played in high school, but he seems very comfortable with it. And so do the Packers, so much so that they decided to make him the starter. Again, from Athlon, a insider talked to them about some fantasy questions. And first question is, how would you treat current starting running back Ty Montgomery in fantasy drafts? Well, before I even get to reading what it says, is he a guy worth drafting in the first two or three rounds, Jerry?
No. I got three other words for you. Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, Devontae Mays. They drafted three running backs. Now, everybody's saying that Ty Montgomery is the main back. Well, if that's the case, why draft three running backs? They're not too – they maybe not sold on Ty Montgomery completely?
No, I agree. I agree. But, I mean, I'll be honest with you. If you're going to draft three running backs, at least – and the first one you get in the fourth round, I would get somebody from a better run-based system. BYU is a good system, but I don't think they're that big of a running powerhouse. Also, UTEP, definitely not. And then Utah State. Utah State, that kid's pretty good. He's 230, 5'10". That's only knocking him is his height. But he's 230 at 5'10". You know, the running back is the size of Montgomery. Jamal Williams, he's 6 foot 213. And that's about what Ty Montgomery is. So, I don't know. But let's read what the report has to say. Although
you won't ever see me drafting Ty Montgomery. Don't trust him.
Okay.
I don't trust him.
Okay. Although Coach Mike McCarthy said after the draft that Montgomery was absolutely the Packers' starting running back, it is not hard to envision Jamal Williams getting the bulk of the carries, which would in turn save some wear and tear on Montgomery so that he can showcase his versatility. Packers Director of Football Operations Elliot Wolf called Williams a classic between the tackles size running back. That speaks. But I honestly think that the acquisition of Martellus Bennett is one of the best things the Packers could have done. Because now Jordan, Devontae, and Randall will be freer to make uncontested passes. But that's also going to take away from some of their passes as well. But will he emerge as a top five fantasy tight end? Yep, Aaron Rodgers is a quarterback who loves going to the tight end. My answer is yes. There's no question Rodgers loves to have a big athletic tight end in his arsenal. But there's still only one ball to go around. Rodgers' mantra of his favorite receiver being the one who's open means Bennett will have to make the most of his targets while messing with a group of which includes Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, and two other tight ends with pass-catching abilities, and Lance Kendricks and Richard Rodgers. has Davante Adams supplanted Randall Cobb as the number two wide receiver? Are there enough targets for the Packers to have three fantasy-relevant wide receivers? That's a good question. Do you think Davante has passed Randall Cobb, JT?
Ooh. You know, I think the reason why, and it's a roundabout way to tell me, but I'll tell you, answer the question, but I have to premise it like this. He was hurt quite a bit, meaning Randall Cobb. He was hurt quite a bit last year, and you didn't see the real Randall Cobb that you saw the previous year. If he can stay healthy, Randall Cobb's the number two, Davante Adams is number three.
I agree. The thing is, Cobb is one of those players that can play a little running back, can play, you know, in the slot, can be on the line as well or flanked out. I think it's a very good thing the Packers have going on offensively, minus the running back situation. But we'll see what this person has to say. Adams insisted during the 2015 struggles that his issues was an ankle injury, not lack of talent. Held in 2016, he proved his point with 91 receptions and 1,214 yards and 14 touchdowns, including playoffs. While Cobb's struggles opened up more opportunities for Adams, and he delivered a healthy Cobb should rebound after two injury-plagued years. Also worth noting, Adams is in a contract year, and when Cobb was in the same situation in 2014, he set career best in every category. But that doesn't translate to adding Martellus Bennett in there to grab a lot of those touches. I honestly think because Martellus is there, that's not going to help Davante Adams' contract situation. I really don't think it will. Hopefully the Packers do what they're supposed to do and win this division. But it's not that easy of a cakewalk. You know, they have 18th-ranked schedule. And it doesn't open up too nicely for them. But it ends on a, you know, pretty decent note. So they have Seattle at Atlanta, Cincinnati, Chicago Thursday night at Dallas, at Minnesota, New Orleans. Then middle of the season they have a bye week. Come back Monday night and play Detroit, at Chicago, Baltimore, at Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, at Cleveland, at Carolina, Minnesota on a Saturday, and they finish out the season at Detroit. I don't think they're going to have that, you know, first five-game losing streak like they did last year. But it's not going to be easy. I'm looking at 10-6, 11-5 for them. Again, both of their winning is going to come on the back end because that's what the Packers do. They heat up towards the end of the season and carry it over into the playoffs. Your thoughts?
I'm thinking about the same. It's not going to be easy. That back end of that schedule, teams going to be jockeying, trying to win as many games as possible, especially teams that are being playoff contention, like the Steelers, like the Bucks, like the Panthers, like the Vikings, and like the Lions. They play two division rivals back-to-back, one at home, one away. I have to believe that 10 and 6 probably wins the division. It would surprise me if they go 11-5, seeing what I'm seeing on in the schedule. 10-6 is probably be more realistic, and they'll be fighting with two other teams for the division title near the end of the season. What they do with Minnesota and Detroit.
That is true. That is true. Now I think they're going to win it, but I also think that Detroit's going to come in second. And Minnesota, depending on the quarterback, will be fighting for that second spot or third spot. And I've already said it earlier, but I might have to rethink my phrase where I said that Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Atlanta were going to make the playoffs. It might be two out of the South and two out of the North. But it also just might be two out of the South and two out of the East because I'm getting more and more favorable thoughts about a team out of the East that's not a Redskin. So We'll talk about that. But let's get to Minnesota as we wrap up the NFC North. They just paid, you know, Mr. Smith some money. Now they're and Everson Griffin, those guys were paid. Now they're talking about paying Xavier Wood. They went out, drafted a very good running back in Dalvin Cook in the second round, who's the future. Latavius Murray is the present, and he'll be there for maybe 1 or 2 years. I say two to three, actually, until Devontae Booker takes the job from him and he becomes the backup. He's starting on the PUP list right now, so Devontae Booker's getting all the reps, all the starting reps, and he's been looking good. So here we go. What are your expectations for Dalvin Cook as a rookie? Is he already the number one running back? And, again, I'm going to tell you, in college, that kid was a beast, but he had some fumbling problems, especially in some big games where the ball just mysteriously fell out of his hands as he went to the end zone. Some people speculated, well, maybe it was some point spread issues going on there. Those were some rumors that went around because it never failed in the beginning part of the season where he was going in for a touchdown and all of a sudden the ball just magically either left his hands or he went out of bounds or something that just didn't jive right, but it happened. But Dalvin Cook will make an immediate impact from an actual football standpoint, but I'm not sure if it will be a big enough statistical to satisfy the fantasy football world. Whether Cook starts or doesn't, he will share the load with Latavius Murray, a bigger back who probably will get the bulk of the short yardage and goal line opportunities. Dalvin will probably be that third down guy just to get his feet wet catching the ball out. And they're talking about putting him in on kickoff returns as well. So there's some chance for some upside there as well. Cook also has a problem with ball security. He could be spending time with Mike Zimmer's doghouse early on. I mentioned it early as well. Which Vikings wide receiver finishes with the most fantasy points in 2017? Look, I like Thiessen, but Stephon Diggs is that guy. He is that guy if they throw him the ball. Well, the best receiver is Stephon Diggs, so I'll go with him. The hope is the running game will be better. It will be, although that's not saying much. With defenses respecting the play action and guy like Diggs can wiggle free deep downfield. Kyle Rudolph is, and I don't know why people don't understand this. He has more target than most tight ends have. It's just the fact that the ball isn't put where it needs to be or something fluky happens, right? But will he finish as a top five fantasy tight end? He could. I don't think he will, but he could. Here's what the insider had to say. I think his career is still on the upswing and that he'll benefit from the upgrade offensive line and a full offense offseason of coordinator Pat Shurmur installing an offense that maximizes matchups. Randolph has come off of a career year and is ready to be a consistent target for Sam Bradford, who has shown accuracy to all points on the field. Now, that's if Bradford's a quarterback. But we'll see what happens with Teddy Bridgewater. Can the Vikings defense special teams produce like a top five fantasy option? Again, the answer for me is yes. I believe the Purple People Eaters are going to be constructive and destructive. The problem is, will the offense stay up with them? But the insider says, I wouldn't count on it simply because they've lost Cordell Patterson. He led the league in kickoff returns three of the past 4 years, and was always a threat to score. And Zimmer preaches sound defense over gambling for crooners. While Marcus Shirelles has scored his share of touchdowns off punt returns, he's not a game breaker, but more of a product of excellent blocking schemes and execution. This is one of the reasons why I believe the Vikings have decided to try Dalvin Cook at Dalvin Cook in the kick return game because of his speed, his explosiveness, and the fact that he's a pretty tough guy to get down. If they can keep up the blocking schemes, that guy can be a threat, a big-time threat in the kick return game, whether it's punt or kickoff. So we'll see what happens there. With all that being said, JT, what are your thoughts about the Minnesota Vikings?
Oof. Offensive line has to improve. They were absolutely horrible last year. Depending on if how much they improve, I think that's they make the most impact. They have a top five defense. They need to keep their guys healthy. And with Sam Bradford as efficient as he is, with a decent running game, just like Detroit, they have to be more of a multidimensional offense and not rely on Sam Bradford, even though he's pretty efficient and takes care of the football for the most part. They have to be a run-based defense. Mike Zimmer is a defensive-minded coach. Most defensive-minded coaches are very conservative in their offensive philosophy. That means running the football and playing a sound defense. Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray are key to that.
Well, you can't run the ball, can't protect the quarterback. Things aren't going to be good for you. And it has to be fixed up front. I think Matt Khalil is no longer with the Vikings. He's gone down to Carolina with his brother. So the brother's the center for Cam Newton, and he is the left tackle for Cam Newton, which isn't bad. But what has the Vikings, or what have the Vikings done to shore up that offensive line? I mean, I'm looking at their draft. I see a center with the third pick, well, the second pick, third round. Then I see a guard in the fifth round, and that's it. I'm not sure who they picked up in free agency, but if you're going to rely on your third rounder and your fifth rounder to come in and be that productive, those guys have got to be able to move mountains, mainly because I believe in Zimmer's style of offense and defense. You play safe, sound, fundamental football. Yeah, go for the interception or the strip or whatever when you can, to tackle first. And on the offense side, you run the ball. You run it, run it, run it, run it, run it, and you set up that play action. Stephon Diggs is a deep threat every time. That's why Kyle Rudolph had a great year last year, because people were stretched out and there was stuff over the middle for Kyle Rudolph to get open. They need to find that second guy. Thiessen, you know, or Thielen seems like he's that guy. Laquon Treadwell was supposed to be that guy out of college. Let's see how he does in his sophomore year. Does he learn from, you know, what happened last year where he let a unrestricted free agent come in and take the number two spot from him, which was pretty much given to him when he was drafted? Will it happen? I don't know. All the comparisons to Randy Moss, but no fizzle and no pop. With that being said, let's go over this schedule, JT. It's the 27th toughest schedule. It's top of the 27th, which means it's supposed to be easy. I'll say this. They have more of an opportunity to come in second place and go for first than Detroit does. But, again, all depends on who's the quarterback and the play of that offensive line. They open up Monday night versus New Orleans. At Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, Detroit, at Chicago Monday night, Green Bay, Baltimore, at Cleveland, and London. Then week 9, they have a bye. They come back and face Washington, then the Rams, at Detroit Thursday night, at Atlanta, at Carolina. So 4 of their first 5 games after the bye are on the road. Then they have Cincinnati at Green Bay on a Saturday, and they finish out with Chicago. It's going to be rough when they come back from that bye, but it's going to be rough before the bye as well. But I do see them possibly doing a 10-6, 9-7 record, mainly because I see them actually running the ball on a lot of these teams, because the teams they're facing don't have really strong run defenses, and that's what the name of the game is going to be for them. And a lot of these teams don't have solidified number one bona fide cornerbacks that can stay with Stephon Diggs. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough schedule. But I do see 10-6, 9-7 with the Minnesota Vikings, especially if Dalvin Cook becomes a kick returner and does some stuff spectacular on the special team side. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts is this. This has got to be the last one because I have I got to go somewhere after this.
It's the last one.
Okay. I think the Minnesota Vikings are one of those bubble teams. You never know what you're going to get. They, like I said, they have to have a running game, man. If they don't have a running game, they're going to be in a lot of fights that they're going to be on the short side of. 9-7 from what I'm seeing here. Maybe, absolutely maybe 10-6. No more than that, though. No more than that. The schedule they have, I know it's one of the weaker schedules down there, but the team, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And like you mapped out, that last set of games, four of the last five games, let me see now, hold on a minute, let me just say, Lions, at
four
the Lions,
five,
at,
after,
yeah, at the, no, at the Lions.
Five after the bye.
Well, no, I'm not even worried about that. What I'm worried about is this. At the Lions on the road, at Falcons on the road, at the Panthers, right there. That's tough. Then they come home and play the Bengals. The Bengals are going to be – they should be more improved, and their offense and their defense are no joke. Then they go on the road to play the Packers and late in the year. And then they wind up playing the Bears at home. That is no joke. One, two, three out of the last six games, they play against division rivals, and two of them are on the road. That's tough. I'd say they're 9-7. I don't even think they get to 10-6.
I mean, it's going to be tough, but I think they can make it. With that being said, we got about 10 minutes left in the show, and you got to go. So,
who
will promote tomorrow's show?
All right. I'm going to go, and since it's getting close, it's about 40 days before the NFL season starts. Next week, I'm starting to break down each position fantasy-wise in my rankings. Tomorrow, I'm going to say, just like I usually do every year, do's and don'ts, what you should do, what you shouldn't do in drafting. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Jump on in there. Here comes fantasy season right around the corner.
All right. With that being said, JT is about to get out of here. So am I. I just closed something I did not mean to close. But thing is this. August, we have the Hall of Fame.
I gotta
game.
Go. I
gotta
see
go. Go ahead and go. Go ahead, go ahead. See you later. The Hall of Fame game is next week, or weekend, I should say. The Hall of Fame induction ceremony happens Thursday night. First game of the season, or preseason, I should say. Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals. What I will tell you is this, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to see football back, and you're going to see some fun this year. I really think you are. Unfortunately, you might see some of the old faces in the same places. I don't think I've always said this, but I'm probably wrong, but hopefully I'm not, that the Patriots, they're looking to come back and defend their title. I think that the door is starting to close on them. It will very soon. And that means that the Jets and the Dolphins and stuff like that, they're going to make it. I mean, look at it this way. The Dolphins made it to the playoffs last year with the 26th ranked offense. And I believe the 14th, 15th ranked defense. So things are going to happen over in that Eastern division. And the Patriots are going to be the ones losing, I hope. I hope. But next week. Next week, we're going to discuss the Hall of Fame as well as close out our divisional previews with the NFC East, which I believe is going to be the best division in football this year. a lot of young talent, but a lot of disarray. We're going to find out what goes on over there as well. So hopefully you guys will be there with us when we talk about the Hall of Fame inductees and prepare you for that game and your fantasy. We're going to also begin talking about, well, I am on this program, our IDPs, individual defensive players. I like talking about the DBs, the linemen, the linebackers, special teams, and all of that. So we're going to talk about that as well, okay? I want to thank you guys for listening to the program. Catch UFC 214 tonight if you can. If you can't, then, you know, enjoy whatever it is you have planned. And hopefully it's something you can talk about with a lot of people tomorrow. I plan to do a lot of things today. I'm about to have some fun with the wife and enjoy the rest of the day. So with that being said, I want to thank you all for listening. Thank my co-host for calling in, JTAT and Money's going to do what he has to do. And we'll see y'all next week. I'm out.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble.
You want to talk smack, you in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy.